Okay, y'all, this is the Freedom to Be Me workshop, and I've asked Francis C. to come up and give his speech.
My name is Francis. I'm Nana. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, sir.
All right. Man, what a great convention this is. I've been to a lot of conventions, and this is solid, about as solid as it gets. And I'm really kind of humbled by my experience of being here. And I went to the World Convention, and I met Mason there. And I was trying to chase down one of the authors in the basic text. Like, I texted her, and she lured me into a World Board workshop, and I had to sit through that to get her signature from my book. And then, like, Mason was basically, we were back-to-back, you know, like, at two different tables. And when we stood up, you know, like, I recognized his voice from the podcast. We exchanged numbers, and we started talking all the time. You know, like, almost every day after the World Convention, he invited me on to that Living Clean podcast that he does. And it kind of turned into this relationship. So I'm going to get to the point of the topic, right? Freedom to be me. And Northern California liberal, just saying. And so, like, we're having these, like, ongoing conversations and stuff, and he, you know, like, we start dipping into the history of Narcotics Anonymous on the podcast, and, you know, like, we get invited by this guy Ron H. and Chris and Boyd to go to Colorado, which is a very liberal state. I'm sure you know that. And then Mason comes out at you know, like, how he voted. And, you know, like, and he was really afraid of being himself about that. And we gave him a hard time all weekend. You know, like, he was in the car with you know. And, but, you know, like, so I'm getting payback this weekend. We were getting some barbecue at Moe's, and they had this big container that said red Kool-Aid. And so I offered Mason some red Kool-Aid. He said that's what he drinks. Except it's orange up in Tennessee. Just, you know, all that. I'm learning the culture here. And that's all outside stuff, you know, like, and so I'm like a history guy, you know, like, and I don't, you know, like, I don't know if I need to talk about how it was. Everybody knows how it was, you know. I got clean when I was 25. I'm 57 now. I love Narcotics Anonymous now more than ever, and I have, like, curiosity, you know, like. I have curiosity, and I love the literature of Narcotics Anonymous. As soon as the new literature comes out, like, I have to have it. Not only because I'm curious about it, but I don't want, like, newcomers quoting stuff that I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, there's, like, curiosity and competition. You know, so that's some of the stuff, you know, that I'm into, right? So there is some couple approval drafts. I don't know if anybody knew that. The Loner IP approval draft is out, and then the H&I Basics approval draft is out. I've already read it, so you guys can get in on that stuff. What I engaged in early was H&I, and I started going into our local county jail. And it was the first time I had relief from myself. And so I found God in jail. Basically, like, I've never really been to jail. I spent the night in the brig when I was in the Navy as I was getting kicked out. And I never knew, you know, like, why I engaged in H&I work. And but I always felt led in that type of work. Like, we would get letters to our committee, and then but the person wasn't saying what pod he was in, and then we, you know, like, we would be led to that pod, You know, like sometimes it would be about going to the pod where all the relapse people were at. And, you know, like the lesson was for me, this is what happens, you know, like if you go back out, you know, like this too could happen to you. And so that led me into doing a prison, right? Like I started going into Susanville Prison. It was a 2-hour drive on an icy road. And I always questioned, why am I doing this? Why am I doing this? And so after a couple of years of doing that, I went to school, I graduated from college, and I got a job in the same town as the prison, so I stopped. And there was no Narcotics Anonymous up there. And so I would, I staked out the AA meetings, and you know, like I started up an 8 o'clock NA meeting near the 7 o'clock AA meeting, and I would like post up in their parking lot and say, come on, I know you guys are hiding out in here. You got, there's an NA meeting right down here. You know, like, so I tried to get NA started over in Susanville. It has a thriving NA community now. So I got fired from that job, and it kind of crushed me. And there was no NA people around. But, you know, like while I was staking out the parking lot, I started asking them, are there some only addicts? You know, like, are there people that talk like me? And they gave me this flyer of a new meeting that was 45 minutes away. It was down in Doyle. And it had this guy's Mike. And so I called Mike that day I got fired. And he drove in the 45 minutes to pick me up in Susanville, and then we went the hour and a half to Reno for a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. And on the trip, what he was saying, like, he's like, you're Francis. I'm like, yeah. He's like, you used to have long hair and a beard. I'm like, yeah. You used to come into Susanville prison. So, like, that day, I understood why I was doing the service. Because you never know whose life you're going to touch as a result of the work that you do. It's not something that always happens in the moment. You're like that sponsee can be your sponsor someday. So he was the lesson that I learned. You know, and but what I also understand is, like, all service in Narcotics Anonymous is valuable. You know, like I've done some convention level service and. Or I've programmed conventions, and like going into that experience, I was pretty arrogant. You know, like there's only one service position that's worthy of my attention, which is, you know, like programming the thing. And after the experience, you know, like I realized that all service, you know, like all service here furthers the primary purpose. And so like, I've been checking out the hospitality room, and it's the very definition of Southern hospitality. I've never seen sandwiches served. You know, like I went in, like JW offered me to buy me lunch, and he took me to the hospitality room and got me a free sandwich. And, so you're like, but I've never seen that before. They don't do that in California. They have some coffee. Pinochle springs up at every Narcotics Anonymous event in California. And, you know, like you might find Cards Against Humanity. You know, like some raunchy card game or something. You know, and that's it. You know, free coffee and bullshit. You know, and you guys like are feeding the masses. I'm just like, man, this is like over the fucking top right here. It just continued to grow, and I took this interest in Narcotics Anonymous. The book is alive to me, and I didn't understand, like, when I was new, like why it spoke to me, and I started asking questions, and like as I keep reading the book, they told me it was written by and for addicts, and I didn't really understand that until I started like hearing a little bit about the history, and that started growing and growing. And I got to meet a guy named Bob Barrett, whose story is I found the only NA meeting in the world. And We lined him up to be a main speaker. He sold me My Years with Narcotics Anonymous book out of the trunk of his car. That furthered the interest in the stories, right? I got to meet Gene Haig, whose story's in the Little White Book, and I'm like, wow, who are these other people? Who are these other people? So that was how I dipped in. Facebook came. Everybody was on Facebook. I started becoming a Facebook CSI person. I started stealing pictures of authors and compiling profiles, and I would find out that one is speaking in Reno or Northern California. I'd go down and I'd talk to them. Who are the other authors? I'd try to see if they would out the other authors, and often they would. And so I'm just talking about my obsession here and me being myself. And so the pandemic happens, and we have this newcomer that's doing a Zoom meeting, and he's like, how am I going to ever get somebody to my Zoom meeting that's a basic text study? And I'm like, you know what? I know who some of the authors are. We can invite them to come and speak on our meeting after we read their stories. And it turned into something, right? And they really started outing each other. And so we had about 40 of the authors come to our meeting. And then we were asked if we were recording it. It started building. We had speaker jams, we had a series of six speaker jams with the stories of the basic text, which was kind of just this interesting journey that I got to go on during the pandemic, just figuring out but it was all from California, right? It was they're from all over the world. Sixth edition came out. So the podcast is furthering that fascination. We just did our first story with that. But I was given this opportunity to go to Oahu, right, and be a speaker on the North Shore of Oahu, that the Oahu Gathering. And I had a buddy that was over there that was this real estate agent, and he had this super secret real estate app. And I'm like, hey, there's these places in the Mid-Pacific Serenity story by Tom C. And so we went to the places, which are all fucking houses now. But, when the story was written in the 70s, there was no houses there. But, he was able to get us there. And I got to, be kind of, enter into the story. And I did that with The Point, too. When my son graduated boot camp in Chicago, there's a story called The Point. And my son had these things he wanted to do while he had his 3 days leave between schooling and boot camp. And he wanted to go to this fucking big ass mall that's in Chicago. I'm like, oh, I hate malls, but I'm going to go with my son. And then the next day he's like, can you take me to a beach? They have this big lake here, and I know there's beaches there, and I want to know where the girls are at. And he's 22. So I'm like, yeah, I know where there's a beach. And there's a story about a swimming hole in South Chicago called The Point. And so I secretly drug my son to The Point, and we took all these pictures of this place that's featured in the story. I'm always trying to work an angle wherever I'm at. What is the Narcotics Anonymous history of the place? And so I get to do these things. And so some of what's happening here with me right now is I get to meet Mason, and he kind of figures out that I'm a history nerd, and I'm into the stories. And then he tells me that he's a part of the Bill Brooks family, right? And I'm like, wow. And then I'm like, I'm going to have to reread that story. And then he tells me about this convention in Decatur. And I'm like, oh shit, Bill Brooks is from Decatur. And then I hear the title of the convention, and the title of the convention comes from the story. So I had to come. You know what I mean? I just had to be here. And so part of what's happening for me this weekend is being in the story and being around the people that you know, like that Bill Brooks loves still in the group's conscience, and what a great experience I'm having. And I wanted to read something out of his story, if that's okay. Clunk. I've been having, like, this is my basic text, and so, like, when I've been finding out who these people are, I've been mailing it to them, and then I get their signatures. And this is the first time I've had a story signed from somebody other than an author of the story, and I've been having his sponsorship family sign the story. And so one of the things I was thinking about is the title of the story is If You Want What We Have. And so the line is, like, what the saying is if you want what we have, you got to do what we do. But what the line in the story is if you want what we have, you have got to take the steps. Right? And I'm like, well, I like that better than you got to do what we do. You know, like, some people do some fucking crazy shit in Narcotics Anonymous that have nothing to do with the steps. You know what I mean? And I realized that, like, taking the steps is probably something that comes from the other fellowship, but I do like the idea of taking that motherfucker. You know what I mean? Like, don't do the step, like, work this, take that
shit. I realized
shit.
That, like, some people do some fucking
holy
crazy
shit
in Narcotics Anonymous that have nothing to...
Where, I just fucked up my recording. He said, I'm going to just push play. Push record. I'm going to set this up here. Hopefully you'll be able to patch it together, whatever's going on there. I interrupted myself with myself. Like, that happens. Does that ever happen to you? Like, you get in your own way? That's what happens when you don't take the steps, right? I think the steps get you out of your own way. Yeah, you know, I think the steps, like, remove all the things between you and love, or you can call it God, right? The last line, like the last paragraph of the story, says, "There is one thing that I feel I can give to every addict to use. I love each and every one of you, and most importantly, God loves you too. I found this love in the wonderful program of NA through God's grace, and you people, come join us. It works." And so, getting back into the steps, you know, like, what is it, you know, like, why is it that we do these steps? The basic text tells us it's the defense against relapse. And so, for me, whenever, you know, like, somebody asks me about sponsorship, I try to get them into the steps right away. You know, like, I take their phone numbers. I don't give them my phone number, right? You know, like, the phone list that goes around. You got Brian's number? You know, like, the newcomer with 20-something days clean? I got his number. You know, like, there's a piece that's our responsibility to the newcomer. I fucked it up. I'm sorry.
That's all right. You're good.
I pushed record again, but I bumped it, and it started talking to me. This one, I think.
This one's going. You're good.
Okay. Do you edit this stuff?
He's got a backup.
Mason can edit it for you. Give me the signal, the 1 minute signal. I learned that down here. They kept giving me the 1 minute signal every time I brought up politics. During this pandemic thing, you know, like, I got a hold of Chris, the history guy, Chris and Boyd, and I compared notes with him about the stories, because during the, like, at one point I got this Excel spreadsheet that had all the stories in it, and then, like, I think he only had, like, two names, like, in his Excel spreadsheet, and part of my obsession was filling in the names, and finally I built up the courage just to randomly call him, and he says, Can we compare notes on this Excel spreadsheet? Because I thought he for sure he'd have the whole thing filled out. And he was kind of impressed with my obsession with it. And then he invited me to engage in interviewing the people that compiled the first half of the basic text. And so I engaged back into my stalking CSI Facebook mode, and found quite a few, I found about 30 people that were at the conferences, and we got to interview, Chris and I got to interview the people that were at the literature conferences. This is the 7 literature conferences that wrote the basic text. So I got to hear the stories. I started really understanding the sacrifice that these people made to write our book. And I'm humbled by it. What a privilege, God keeps leading me into the next thing. And what I know is I have to keep taking this program. You know what I mean? I have to keep taking this step. I have to keep working on my biases, right? Coming here, I was, Mason helped me with my bias, right? My political bias, he's coming to Northern California, so it's going to come back around, just so you know. It's been the best time. This has been the one of the best experiences I've had. Wednesday night we went to Open Minds and Miracles, the meeting that Bill Brooks started. We manipulated our way into the story. I kept holding up the story and pointing to the secretary, right? We got to read this tonight. People are here for this convention. And it was read, and people were weeping, because of the gratitude that they had for this man that starts the first meeting in Alabama, that inspires a convention. The full fruit of the labor of love is happening here, right now, in this convention. Newcomers are getting clean. People are connecting with each other from all over the United States. I'm pretty sure, the dream, that Bill Brooks had for Alabama, for this part of the country, is being realized, in this moment. And I'm in this story. I came to this convention, right? I came to this convention to feel the spirit of Bill Brooks and the people that he helped get clean, and they're helping get clean. But this is a part of the story. This isn't the story that's in the book. This is the story that's unfolding, in the moment of the history of you're making history of Narcotics Anonymous as we speak, and one person's sacrifice. Yeah, we're not down to this yet. Recently, I got we have a guy from Northern California that was at the literature conferences, and I did a bunch of H&I work with him, and he never told me about the history that he participated in. And so I've become our regional history and archives chair. Then I start finding out about this guy that starts a newsletter, the Mainline newsletter. The Mainline newsletter became a hub of communication for the writing of the basic text. And my guy from Northern California starts this newsletter. And I got invited, we did a thing on during the pandemic on the 40th anniversary of the First World Literature Conference. And I made a shirt, right? And then we just came up on the 45th anniversary of the First World Literature Conference, and I busted out the shirt again. And Chris invited me to do a YouTube clip on the First World Literature Conference and the contribution of Northern California to that conference. And so that was kind of a fun thing. So I have this shirt that I've been making that says, "You are the book." And that's how they plugged the flyer says you are the book on it for this conference that they were trying to get people to, because you guys are the book. We are the book. That's how our literature is written. It's not written by a single person. It's written by the fellowship with the voice of addicts, you know, like being put into it. You know, like you can participate, and still you can participate in the writing of our literature. And this guy that passes away from cancer, right? He had about 30 years clean. He was like a regional player down from the Bay Area. And his brother, who's a using addict, shows up to say goodbye to him on his birthday. And so the guy that's dying, he says, well, you know, he's catching that spirit of hospice of one of our members. Like Mason talks about his father and all that. But like this was, oh, I'm down to one. So I ended up with this guy's brother who gets clean. His brother sends him to an NA meeting, and he stays clean. He's 2 days clean when he passes away, right? And then he turns out his brother lives in my town, and so I become a support person for him. He asks me to help him read, and so I'm helping this newcomer read the basic text. Because his sponsor told him to read, but he can't. He struggles with reading because he's dyslexic. So we start reading at 6:30 in the morning on Tuesdays and Thursdays at a coffee shop. Then other people hear about the book study and they start showing up, and then it starts growing and we outgrow the coffee shop. One of my sponsees just moves into a new apartment. We move into the apartment and bring all our lawn chairs and fill up his living room, and we outgrow his apartment. Now we're in a T-shirt shop, the place that makes the shirts, right? And they name the book study "You Are the Book," and like it's the sweetest thing. But interestingly enough, I go to Open Minds and Miracles, and they have the same format. We read a paragraph, and then we discuss the paragraph, right, at length. We dive into the literature. We don't read the whole chapter and then talk about it. We read the paragraph and we talk about the paragraph, and it's a deep dive. And it's like born of helping the newcomer. So during the literature conferences, there was an urgency to write our book because people were dying. That was the urgency. It took us 30 years to get a book, right? And if you look at the timeline of the literature conferences, they started happening quicker and quicker and quicker between conferences, because when they all came together and started talking about how important this is, you know, like it became more important. And so it is as important today to share this book and this message with people that there's hope for them. There's hope for the addict that suffers. Today as much as any day. Addiction has always killed addicts, which is, I think we're hearing about it a lot today because of the nature of the drugs, but it's always killed addicts, and it's always been a deadly disease. So welcome to NA. Thank you so much for letting me be a part of this story, the Bill Brooks story, the Out of the Dark and Into the Light convention. My heart is really touched by my experience. Thank you.
Come here. Give me a hug. Great job, man. Up there. You
good hand. Y'all give him another hand. Next is going to be AJM on the same topic.
Woo! Let's go!
Just take 25 minutes.
I'm AJ. I'm an addict. And I am grateful to be here and see all these wonderful faces. Matt, thank you for asking me to speak. My friend Matt, he probably knows me longer than anyone. I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous back in probably 2008-ish by H&I. And so at that time, I knew that, well, I knew I had found my solution in that moment when H&I came into the treatment facility I was in. You know, and once I got out, I knew I wasn't ready to get clean, but for the first time in my entire life, I knew there was a solution, because years prior to that in high school, I remember sitting in my bedroom with my back against the door, knowing that I was going to die from the use of drugs. And I was okay with that. Because there was no solution, there was nothing. That's just what it was, and I was going to ride it until I couldn't ride it anymore. And so, anyway, I think it was around that time, in those years that I, was it 2008-ish? Yeah, I met Matt, and that was a different time. And, you know, I got clean February 26th of 2012. And, you know, so though I went back out, there was some time I was running around NA. And, you know, years go by, and I'm in the rooms now, and I start seeing Matt around, and I just know he looks familiar, but I couldn't really place it. And he's friends with a friend of mine. And then it hit me, and I'm like, oh, that's Matt. You know, like, we used to run around a little bit. And so it's cool, like Francis was saying, just how this program works, you know. And I do want to start with saying that the message of Narcotics Anonymous is that an addict can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way of life. And the message is hope, and the promise is freedom from active addiction. And, you know, I found that. But what I didn't know is that it didn't promise freedom from myself. Because when I got here, I thought the problem was drugs. I didn't realize that it was just me, but I had to get the drugs out of the way in order to see me clearly. And you know, so this topic is freedom to be me. And what's been going on recently in my life is that I have no idea. I feel like I have no idea who the fuck I am. There's behaviors. There's obsessions. There's beliefs that have come up that go against everything that I was and who the fuck I thought I was just years ago, right? I've been in the rooms for a little while now, and you know, what I'm finding is that, because sometimes I'll get in my head and I'm like, AJ, like, you love yourself. Like, what the fuck's going on? You know what I mean? Like, you, of all people, know how to be compassionate towards yourself. But yet all I'm hearing in my head is all the hatred and the judgment and all these beliefs that break me down over and over and over in my head, every situation, everything, all the time. But what I realized today when I called my sponsor, and maybe not realize, but she reminded me that this program is like an onion layer, right? And I'm at this new layer. So that, though that is true, I loved myself deeply at one time in Narcotics Anonymous. Just for this moment, that is not true. I love myself, and I'm going to say that I love myself deeply just because I'm going to fake it till I make it. You know, so anyway, so I was talking to her. I'm like, how the fuck am I supposed to share on, like, freedom to be me when I'm struggling with who I am? What does that even mean? You know what I'm saying? And so we were just talking, and you know, she's, you know, first off, get in the literature. You know, that's step one, is pick it up and read it. And I was like, okay, great. So, like, this was at 11 o'clock this morning, because that's just, you know, I just had to wait till today to talk to her about this. And so I'm like, okay, well, would you like suggest anything in particular? She's like, step working guide, step four. I said, okay. So I start reading it. And the second paragraph says, first, we should ask ourselves what we want out of recovery. Most of us answer this question by saying that we just want to be comfortable or happy or serene. We just want to like ourselves. But how can we like ourselves when we don't even know who we are? And then I was like, okay, fuck you. Fuck you, Kathy. And what's interesting is that I always used to say, like, I just want to be happy. I just want to be happy. I just want to be happy. But I believe that happiness is a result of me practicing principles, right, ultimately. I'm going to go down a few paragraphs down in the step working guide of step four. It says, each layer of the onion represents another layer of denial, the disease of addiction, our character defects, and the harm we've caused. The core represents the pure and healthy spirit that lies at the center of each one of us. And, you know, I believe that I was born with the principles that this program embodies. And through life experiences and along the way, I learned that people let me down, people lie. And then as I was talking to my sponsor for the second time today, I was like, you know, I remember this memory came back, and it was in fourth grade, and there was this girl that always stole my shit. And like, it was like a friend, like I'd go to her birthday parties, but it was almost like I had compassion for her, because I knew, you know, I knew home life wasn't great, and that's just something I felt. No, it was just something I felt inside. But like, she would always steal, and I remember getting so mad all the time. I'm like, and then she'd lie, you know, like she would lie and say she didn't. I'm like, I watched you, you know what I mean? Like, I literally watched you. So it's situations like that, though that seems small, it's like that reiterated this new belief that I lived by an active addiction, that people are untrustworthy, right? So that's just one example, but through life I learned these things, and so I began to live by these new beliefs that I had created, right? And those are the beliefs I lived by through active addiction when I came to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. So what Narcotics Anonymous has been doing in my life over these years is helping me create new beliefs to live by. And like when I was using, what using did is it helped me not care, right? So it gave me the ability to be apathetic towards everything. And that's detrimental to working the program of Narcotics Anonymous. And that is like, me practicing apathy is abandonment of self. And then it's also like an invitation into the triangle of self-obsession, right? Apathy is the lack of spiritual principle. So, and I can definitely go there clean. You know, I want to read something else. So I'm just reading through the fourth step in the step working guide. And then I come across this paragraph, and it says, it's on page 33. It says, we may also have to overcome a barrier that grows from an unwillingness to reveal more of our disease. Many of our members with clean time have shared that an inventory taken later in recovery revealed that their addiction had spread its tentacles so completely through their lives that virtually no area was left untouched. This realization is often initially met with feelings of dismay and perplexity. And that's exactly what I got a new sponsor about a year and a half ago, and what that opened up for me is a new perspective. Working with her gave me a new perspective, and she started to open my eyes to just a new perspective. And what happened during that time is exactly that, is I was just so dumbfounded. I'm like, what? Like, this shit's just insane. You know what I mean? Like, I just felt so lost in the program of Narcotics Anonymous, and so disconnected, right? Because what I forgot and lost somewhere along the way is connection with our literature, right? And every single time I talk to her, she always leads me back here, but yet I won't talk to her for a week. I'm not in the literature for a week, and I call her with virtually the same thing. Looks a little different, but the point is the same. The solution is right here. It's just a matter of me opening it, right? Because I could turn to any page and read anything on it, and I could guarantee I would be like, oh my God, that's right where I'm at. Literally any of our literature, I could just open to any page and be like, oh my God, you know? And it's like, yeah, this, like Francis was saying, this is about me, written by us, by me, you know? So of course it is. But one of the first things that she kind of opened my eyes to was the principles, and like how to practice these principles and live by these principles. Because I would have told you that I was solid in my recovery. I had a solid foundation. I worked at a great program. I was so connected. Just the list goes on, right? My feet were knocked out from under me, because I was clean, I was connected with people in the rooms, and I would go to meetings. Outside of that, there wasn't anything else going on. So I started using clean, right? I started using these defects like control, anger, manipulation, self-hatred, isolation. I started using these things, so the disease is so alive and well, and meanwhile I'm living in this fantasy that I'm so well connected, and like, you know, my program's so solid and all of this. Meanwhile, I haven't opened a book in, I mean, well over a year, I can assure, probably, you know what I mean? Like, I go to meetings, literature studies, but for me personally, I was not spending time in here intentionally, you know? And so anyway, I started to really focus on the principle of honesty. And to me, what I've found is honesty is freedom from deceit. And what that means for me is that more than anything else, I need to be honest with myself, right? And like, when I'm honest with myself, then I can get honest with somebody else. And because the indispensable principles, honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness, we all know this, or most of us probably do. So I'm practicing honesty. I can, you know, if I talk to my sponsor and I tell her kind of half the problem, I'm going to get half the solution, right? So it's imperative that I am honest. Imperative. If I am unwilling, if I'm not open-minded, fine. Fine. But can I be honest? And I called her in such a place of desperation, and I was honest. I said, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. With 11 and a half years clean, no idea. So disconnected. Right? And like, at one time in my recovery, Narcotics Anonymous was everything. Right? Like, it gave me purpose. It gave me connection. It showed me love. It showed me what unconditional love was, and self-love and all these beautiful things. And then I stayed clean. And I got a life. Got a house, got a job, got a long-term relationship. But where is Narcotics Anonymous? Right? Where is the thing that gave you the ability to have all this? And I was like, oh yeah, I wouldn't be here without Narcotics Anonymous. And so, you know, a year and a half ago, I got back into the literature, back into formally writing, intentionally, consistently. And, you know, it's been excruciating this past year. There's been a lot of days that I'm like, I don't know if I can stay clean today. And that's with being back in the literature. Because, you know, it says that I get freedom from active addiction, right? Like, that's what it's promising me. But it's my responsibility to work a program of Narcotics Anonymous. And what that means is calling my friend Ashley and saying, I don't know what's going on, but, like, I can't sit with these feelings. Like, it feels like bugs are crawling in me. Like, I just want to harm myself, take something, or something else to not feel this way. But just for this moment, I'm not going to use. So I'm going to tell you what's happening and what it feels like physically, what it feels like. And, like, I can barely put into words because it's this sensation. And it's just so unbearable. And that is the reason I used. So these aren't new feelings. These aren't new experiences. I'm just not using today one fucking moment at a time. With yours clean. Okay? And that is okay. But if I'm not honest about that, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. I don't give a shit how long I've been clean. I don't know what the fuck to do. I'll read the whole thing, every piece of literature we got, and somehow I'm still going to call you and say, I don't know what to do. I just need help. I just need help. Can I come sit at your house? Late. Right? And I'm, you know, I don't stay up that late. But, like, you know, I'm willing today to do what I did when I got here. And if that's stay up till 1 a.m. on the phone, stay up till midnight at someone's house, nodding out because I'm just tired. I need to go to bed, but I just need to be around somebody, you know? And so can I be honest, right? And can I be open-minded, right? When I'm honest, can I be open-minded to the suggestion? And then am I willing to follow through with whatever is suggested, right? And, like, one moment at a time, I am. And, like, it's interesting because a lot of days are so hard. You know, that I'm literally like, I just need to make it today. And so it's humbling. It's humbling. And but, like, I'm doing it just like I said, like I did when I got here. You know what I mean? I don't know. I don't always know what to do, but I know that the program of Narcotics Anonymous is the solution. And my network and the people here will fucking save me. I just know if I fall, someone will run up and grab me. You know what I mean? Like, that's where I'm at. Like, there's something to be said about that. That level of desperation where I'm just fucking willing. I'm like, I don't give a shit. Like, I'm so tired. I'm so tired of hating myself. You know, like, I don't want to live like that because I've lived without that clean. AJ, you know how to not judge yourself, man. You know, but it's like, what's beautiful about this is that I have so much awareness that I'm hearing the little voice that is providing me with the judgment, the self-hatred, the whatever. Because if I couldn't hear it and I was, like, numb to it, then, like, I couldn't get in a solution and, like, recover from it and heal from it. So, you know, so though this is a beautiful process and I wouldn't change anything about it because I do have experience, and there was more in here and it talked about it that I did mark, but essentially that I have the experience to know that things will get better. I think it may be here. Yeah, I'm gonna end with this. In the searching and fearless part of the fourth step, it says, Taking a fearless inventory means going ahead despite our fear. It means having the courage to take this action no matter how we feel about it. It means having the courage to be honest even when we're cringing inside and swearing that we'll take what we're writing to the grave or saying or feeling or whatever. I improvised that. It means having the determination to be thorough even when it seems that we've written enough. It means having the faith to trust this process and trust our higher power to give us whatever quality we need to walk through this process. Okay? And like I'm reading from the fourth step in the step working guide, but I'm not on a fourth step and it doesn't fucking matter because this shit applies to me right now. You know what I'm saying? I don't need to be in this fourth step to hear that. Hear that. Can I practice courage? To be honest. Okay, I'll pick up the phone. I'll be honest. Okay, even when I don't want to say what it is that's happening. I said a few months ago for the first time that I was abusive in my relationship. I don't want to say that. And like, because to me, abuse looks a certain kind of way, but the abuse that I'm talking about, no one would ever even notice. But I do. I notice. And that is what it is to me because that's not who the fuck I want to be. Control is abusive when I am in it. When I'm controlling you and trying to control whatever the fuck it is you're doing so that I feel some kind of way, that's fucking abuse. And I can say that today because one moment at a time, I'm not acting on it. Okay? So, like, the hope is that there's a solution. Okay, that's the hope, is that there's a fucking solution. Okay? And I know that if I just keep doing the work and I just keep coming back and I just don't use no matter what, there's hope. Okay? So, I love you guys so much and I'm so glad to be here and that's all I got.